Okay, we are back. It's 855-6848. This is indeed the Voice of Reason, News Talk 1270. Grady Hawkins here along with Joe Schmidbar, and I believe our guest, Gila Shaversky, is on the line.
I am indeed.
Go. Thank you very much for joining this morning. I apologize in advance because I'm probably going to mispronounce your name. I'm sorry.
That's fine.
This is Grady Hawkins and my partner, Joe Schmidbar.
Yes,
hi.
I'm here. Yep.
Okay, thank you very much for joining us this morning, and how are you?
I'm depressed, thank you.
Depressed.
Well, we all seem
everyone
to be.
Everyone here?
Well, we can understand why that may be. Before we start, could you talk to us a bit about your organization, the Coalition of Women for Peace?
Right. We're a coalition of 9 different women's peace organizations in Israel. And we represent groups like Women in Black, which stands on vigil every week, Bat Shalom, which negotiates political issues together with its Palestinian counterpart, and the New Profile, which talks about the militarism inside Israel. So we're 9 different peace organizations, and as a coalition, we have actually founded the movement called Women Against War. And we did that on the very first day of the war to try to bring this conflict with Lebanon to an end.
And has the peace movement been activated? I mean, is there a really rising group of people questioning what's going on right now?
No, I would not say that there's a large group, but it's slowly beginning to increase. You know, we're into the fourth week of the war now, and the longer it goes on and the heavier the losses for Israel, the more likely that we'll see opposition to the war inside Israel. Yesterday was a horrible day. There were 15 Israelis killed and probably a ton more of Lebanese, but the Israeli public opinion suddenly took a jolt with that number.
Okay, let's talk about... Okay, I'm sorry. This is Grady Hawkins again. Let's talk about Israeli public opinion, because here in the States, United States, our mainstream media is constantly telling us that all of the Israeli people are together. They're behind the government. They want to pursue this war. Is that correct? Or
most Israelis are, in fact, behind the war. It's something like 90% of the country.
Okay.
So that's an awful lot of people.
All right. But do you,
sorry, go on.
Oh, do you see, like you were talking about, a groundswell of opposition beginning to happen?
It's early to say groundswell, but we're beginning to see new people join our protest events. Today there's an entirely new group that was formed outside of Women Against War, and they're holding their own vigil as we speak right now in Tel Aviv opposite the Ministry of Defense. So that's a very welcome event for us, that there are new faces out there and they will bring in others. Until now, we have been increasing in numbers, but at a snail's pace. We were 1,000 the first week we demonstrated, and then 3,000, and then 5,000. So those are the numbers. It may feel like a sizable number, but it's, to us it feels like nothing when you're confronted with screaming people who think that you're a traitor to the cause.
One of the issues your group deals with is militarism. How much of what's going on is driven by this rise of militarism in Israel?
Oh, a lot of it. Militarism has really overwhelmed this country since it's always been bad in Israel, or increasingly bad over the years. But now, with the war going on, if you turn on the TV, almost any station, what you see is military men who are analyzing for you what's taking place. What I would like to see is non-military people, including women, who are telling you about what the alternative options are to war. And that doesn't exist at all. If you're a soldier now, you're holy. The rest of the population is just the cheering, the fans that are cheering on the soldiers. They are now the heroes and gods of our society.
What are some of those options that you just spoke about? What are those options for peace?
Well, the primary option is diplomacy, is to sit down and negotiate a deal that works for both sides. We know that Nasrallah, the head of the Hezbollah movement, is very eager to have a ceasefire, and that certainly is would work well for those of us who don't want any more killing. The problem is that in Israel, about 74% of the population oppose a ceasefire at this stage. They want the ground attack to continue. They want Israel to to get more areas under its control so that when the war ends and the ceasefire comes in, they will have a better bargaining chip.
So you feel the only way there's going to be a, what's going to drive toward a ceasefire? I mean, is it just going to be excessive casualties, killing on both sides to the point where they're just, there's a turnaround in terms of public opinion?
I believe, yes, like Vietnam in the States in the 60s, I think it will be the number of casualties rising that ultimately gets Israel to stop. The politicians in Israel are being driven entirely by the military officers. There is usually Israel has a prime minister who has some military background. You know, our previous prime ministers, yes. Sharon and Rabin and others, have been ex-chiefs of staff. And while I think that's terrible to have a general be your prime minister, on the other hand, at least they were able to stand up to the army when the army came to them and said, here's what we should do. They were able to say, no, I'm sorry, that doesn't look good to me. Let's think of other things. But now what happened when the event that started off this war took place, namely the killing of several Israeli soldiers and the kidnapping of two, the Prime Minister of Israel called in his military advisors to give him the options, what should happen next. He did not call in his political advisors to find out what could be some diplomatic alternatives.
Mm-hmm. Well, how much is this driven by the sort of another agenda, which I guess what I'm trying to say is how much of this is driven? Well, stuff that we've been reading is that there's a real desire for the water of the river up north.
The Litani River?
The Litani River. How much is this driven by another agenda? How much is this just madness just sort of unfolding?
It is not driven by desire for water in Lebanon. Absolutely not. Not that Israel has more water than it can use. It does not. But it has other sources of water, which it will retain or wants to retain in any peace settlement. The waters of the waters of Lebanon are outside the realm of what Israel plans to hold.
Okay.
It does not plan to remain in Lebanon. We had an 18-year-long war in Lebanon, and that was way too long for us, and it does not want another instance of ongoing occupation of Lebanon. So water is not an issue.
Okay, so basically it's just sort of unfolding events that are just sort of driving this.
Yeah, look, the political echelon of Israel will tell you that it is our effort to clean out the hornet's nest of terrorists.
Right.
Who have taken over southern Lebanon. The peace activists will tell you, and I'm one of them, that an ongoing problem has been our relationship with all the Arab countries surrounding us. This is yet another manifestation of that, and that until we sit down and negotiate peace with everybody, including the Palestinians and the Syrians, we will not be able to avoid having terrorist incidents on our borders.
Mm-hmm. And your group is organized around trying to address the greater political issue, which is Palestine. What is the sentiment right now in terms of Palestine? It's sort of been taken off the front page, and we've been reading there's been a lot of Israeli incursions, there's been a lot of conflict in Gaza and in on the West Bank.
Yes, that's correct. Under the cover of war, there's been really indiscriminate killing in Gaza. I use that word very cautiously. It's the word that's been used by the journalists in our leading newspaper to describe the actions of the Israeli army in Gaza over the past 4 weeks, indiscriminate killing. So the Israeli army is trying to make headway in Gaza at the same time that it's everyone's attention is riveted on Lebanon. Our group, the Coalition of Women for Peace, by the way, if I could plug our website.
Yeah, by all means, of course,
okay.
Yes.
It's coalitionofwomen.org. The Coalition of Women for Peace is a group that has focused on the occupation and trying to end the occupation, get Israel to withdraw its settlements from the occupied areas, share Jerusalem as the capital of both Palestine and Israel, and find an equitable solution for the several million Palestinian refugees that are scattered around the world. So this has been our focus, but as I say, when the Lebanon war broke out, we turned our attention immediately to just trying to end this bloodbath.
Are there real concerns in Israel that this could turn into a generalized war where Syria is drawn in and even Iran is drawn into this conflict? Because that's one of the big fears in among the peace community in the United States, is this is going to turn into a very generalized regional conflict.
Certainly, it's a concern of the peace community in Israel, but it is not a concern in general among Israelis. And the reason is that the Israeli leadership, political leadership, has not been talking about it. It would scare the devil out of everyone if they said, by the way, we're worried that Syria and Iran might enter the fray. They don't say that. If they said that, maybe Israelis would be less supportive of the ongoing war with Lebanon.
Because as we speak, I mean, the Syrian army is on its highest level of alert, and they've mobilized their reserves, and it's getting scary. How much of this is driven by the? I mean, a lot of this, from our point of view, it seems that the Bush administration has given just carte blanche to the Israeli government to do pretty much what it wants, and there's a resupply going on, and there's intelligence being transferred. How much is that is that to do with this whole conflict? Is the U.S.
role? Oh, it has everything to do with the conflict. If Bush would say no to Israel, Israel would not be able to send one more man into Lebanon. It's the leverage of the United States with Israel that is so critical here. America supplies us militarily and, you know, turns off the spigot when it wants to, and has so much control over decisions made on an international level. So, yes, if America would stop and tell Israel to stop, Israel would stop dead in its tracks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, this is Grady again. I have a question about, are you concerned about the economic impact on Israel because of this war? I mean, Israel, the economy is very, very small. How can you maintain this kind of, you've got 40,000 reserves called up in constant combat. I mean, are you concerned about the economic impact at all?
I am, but not in terms of the cost, the direct cost of the war. The direct cost of the war will be easily financed by Israel's budget for the military, and it recently had a windfall of $1 billion from Warren Buffett, your billionaire, who purchased an Israeli company, and the tax to Israel from that purchase amounts to $1 billion, which goes a long way toward spending hiring your reserve forces and paying for them. The United States will inevitably kick in with additional materiel. Mm-hmm. The deeper concern is the indirect impact on the poor inside Israel, and that has already had a profound effect. There are people who can no longer work at their jobs. The entire north of the country of Israel is paralyzed. You know, when I tell you about the terrible situation in the north of Israel, I bite my tongue thinking how it compares with the even worse situation in southern Lebanon. Nevertheless, as an Israeli, I look at the poor here and I see that they're the ones who will be paying the price. They don't have jobs left, some of them. They haven't been working for a month. There are many employers who are not going to pay them for a month of not working. Mm-hmm. And when the situation is restored, they will again be out trying to make ends meet of the month they did not have income.
Well, another question I wanted to ask, and mm-hmm. very clearly, is the boycott. There's more and more talk of a boycott of Israel, and it's very similar. At least here, there's talk about viewing the present Israeli situation almost in relation to Palestine, in relation to just Arabs in general, is very similar to South Africa. And there's really movement afoot among some churches in the United States and around the world to engage mm-hmm. in the same kind of boycott against Israel as in South Africa. Is that registering at all in terms of what's happening?
Whether it's registering, no, not really. Israel mm-hmm. is not noticing it. Mm-hmm. The movement is about divestment,
right.
Economic leverage. It's not about a universal boycott of everything that has to do with Israel. I think targeted sanctions against specific things are very, very useful. I think a universal boycott will only hurt the poor, mm-hmm. and the leaders will shrug it off.
Mm-hmm.
I do think, though, that there are ways to stop supplying with money some of the companies, the corporations, that are feeding into the occupation, such as Caterpillar tractors.
Right, right, yeah.
And that sort of thing is very valuable, and I do praise the various churches that have been examining this issue.
Mm-hmm. The other question I want to ask, where is the left on this in terms of Israel, I mean, and politically? I mean, it seems, I mean, for a long time there's a very powerful kind of left in Israel, and that really has really wanted to move towards settlement and wanted to move towards... Are they weaker now than ever in terms of the political leverage?
Before the war started, I think Israel was as close as it has been in the last 20 years to making a political accommodation with the Palestinians. I'm not talking about Olmert's plan for unilateral disengagement. I mean, in general, Israelis are now fed up with occupation, and they want to lead normal lives. They want to think about their cars and their families and their next vacation. They don't want to be figuring out where the next terrorist will come from. So that had been moving well until this war broke out. This war is really playing havoc with attitudes of Israelis, and I'm afraid that we're going to have a much higher mountain to climb when it's over to try to get Israelis back to wanting to or feeling they can trust Palestinians to make peace with them.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, well, the other thing that's been going on, which is basically Israel has in the West Bank and has been actively going after Hamas.
Hamas, right.
Recently, I guess, the Speaker of the Palestinian Parliament, who's from Hamas, has been arrested. I mean, is there, you know, how is this perceived? I mean, in many pieces, people are saying this is, you know, you want democracy, an elected government is created. You know, that's won by someone that the United States and Israel are not particularly in love with, and all of a sudden this turns into they're arrested, they're incarcerated.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is there support for that
it's
kind of
terrible.
Stuff?
It's terrible. The peace movement feels that it's terrible to be arresting their elected leaders. But, yes, there is support for it among most Israelis.
Mm-hmm.
But don't forget that it came in the wake of the kidnapping of an Israeli soldier in Gaza. As I said earlier, soldiers are little heroes in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And when a soldier was kidnapped by the Hamas, or actually a different party, but it was associated in people's minds with the Hamas, the Israelis said, do everything you can to get him back. And one of the first things the Israelis did was go in and arrest and keep incarcerated some 14 Palestinian ministers of their government.
Okay, Gila.
So,
this is Grady again. How are you getting your message out inside Israel? I mean, you've got the internet, of course. Are you using? Do you have your own local newspapers, your own local radio programs? Are you getting any kind of airtime at all for this?
We're getting very, very little airtime. Today there was an amazing article about us in the newspaper, and it was the first that we had seen that really. Covered the activities in which we're engaged. But by and large, what we do is demonstrations. We have one mass demonstration every week, as well as mass as we can get, which is something like 5,000 people at best. And we have daily vigils every single day. We have a vigil at the Prime Minister's house in Jerusalem, in Tel Aviv at the Defense Ministry, and in Haifa near a place where it's constantly being shelled. And sometimes, in fact, they hold this vigil when the shells are falling, and they hold up their sign saying, Women Against War. So those demonstrations are important. We have handed out leaflets that explain what's wrong with continuing the war. We have distributed stickers that say, Children in Beirut and Haifa all want to live. And we've been putting as many letters to the editor and articles of our own into newspapers as we possibly can. Everybody is really run dry, running around, trying to do things. But that's what it'll take until some more people join us. And it will inevitably happen. More people will join us as the losses rise, sad to say.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I've got an email question here from one of our listeners. It says, the history of Israel is one of colonialism, theocracy, racism, and interminable militarism, including war crimes of epic proportion. Wouldn't peace be best served by a binational Palestinian state based on equality?
First, I thought you were talking about the U.S.
Wow.
Thank you.
Touché.
Another soundbite. Thank you.
We would agree with
We would agree with that statement as well, by the
well,
way.
Well, I mean, anyway, that's...
No, the cause would not be served by having one state with Palestine. There's, it's too utopian. Neither side is ready for that. Both sides are fearful of each other, and the first stage has to be, at least first stage, has to be that each side has its own independent sovereign state and feels safe enough with its own elected leaders, and then maybe down the line we can have a little federation the way Europe is now federated among the countries there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, Matt, I think that's all the time we have. I want to thank you very, very much for joining us this morning. This is Grady Hawkins.
And Judgment Bower.
And shalom.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling.
All right, shalom. Thank you very much.
Shalom.
Okay. Right, okay. At first, I thought you were talking about the United States. That's got to be the best comeback we've had in a long time. Go ahead. We've got a couple minutes to make some comments.
The irony of it is they both mirror each other.
Sure.
There are people who will say that Israel is a colony of the United States.
Sure, absolutely.
And that it's essentially supported by U.S. You know, I mean, she says it very clearly. So it's a real difficult question. I find the whole thing to be very kind of disturbing and sad because, you know, she's trying to do the right thing. But
absolutely.
Is there room to do the right thing? And is this conflict simply going to boil down to... Mm-hmm.
I was kind of surprised about the answer about the water because I thought she would have said yes for sure. Yeah. And that's what the theory that we've been kind of harping on because that's what we've been, you know, the case studies we've done about where, you know, where's the water? Is this all about water? And I was also going to ask her, are they getting any sort of editorial support at all as well from
a little bit? But the real issue is this, the motivations behind this conflict. I disagree with her regarding the Latani. I mean, mm-hmm. I've just spent all yesterday researching it, and so are you.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Tremendous evidence pointing to the real...
Ultimately, that is probably part of the puzzle here. Securing water rights from the Latani River, which is about 20 miles inside Lebanon across the border. And at one point, it's only 2.5 kilometers away from the Israeli border.
Yeah, and there's already
it
history
winds
of using,
down and turns right.
Of using the water. But another interesting thing was Warren Buffett's involvement.
Yes, Warren Buffett.
He acquired the company of ISCAR, which is a metalworking company.
Right.
And apparently it was... that seems to be financing. I find it strange that would be financing the war, but I guess
right. $1 billion will buy an awful lot of bullets, and you can you can use that tax break or whatever it is to manipulate.
I mean, it must be very hard for her,
it's got to be incredibly
in terms of taking
for her.
This such an extremely unpopular position, and again. It's a real difficult role to be against the war, and when you have, again, it's sort of like, as you said, it's like us being in the United States when we realistically read our history and we look at what the role of this country has had in terms of its colonialism, its brutality, its hinging. I mean, the whole history of the United States is one of stepping in indigenous people's rights, and then you look at Israel and you see the same thing. I don't know what the solution is. I mean, again, it just points out that, the trajectory of history is playing itself out.
Right.
And the real thing that's really the key to me right now, and as we edge toward this, what I fear to be a large configuration is, what's the interest of the Americans, of me and you, in this conflict? Where has our foreign policy gone away? Why isn't there a debate about this? Putting aside the two-state issue versus one-state issue.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Putting aside those issues, and because those are regional issues that focus on Israel and Middle East. Why are we in the middle of this? Why are American taxpayers paying for Israel to engage in this kind of horrific?
Mm-hmm.
And it is horrific. I don't really care. I mean, I'll be blunt. I mean, it is horrific. I mean, you're slaughtering
children. Well, it is. Of course it is.
And I think there's been a massive miscalculation by the Israeli military, and it is a militarized state. The thing is, this debate has not really come alive in America around what's our support for this conflict mm-hmm. and for Israel. And is it to our best interest as we have our airports shut down because of a possible terrorist alert?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Stay tuned. We got Art Klein is going to be here to talk from the Sierra Club to talk about what's happening down in our Erie County Forest. I want you to stay tuned. We got the news coming up at the top of the hour. The phone number is 855-6848. This is Grady Hawkins along with Joe Schmidt-Bauer. We're taking a break. Stay tuned for the news. We'll be back. This is WHLD, the Voice of Reason, News Talk 1270.